ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
Canto 3, Chapter 29, Text 39. No one is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is anyone his enemy or friend, but he gives inspiration to those who have not forgotten him and destroys those who have. Purport. Forgetfulness of one's relationship with Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of one's repeated birth and death. A living entity is as eternal as the Supreme Lord, but due to his forgetfulness, he is put into this material nature and transmigrates from one body to another. And when the body is destroyed, he thinks that he is also destroyed. Actually, this forgetfulness of his relationship with Lord Vishnu is the cause of his destruction. Anyone who revives his consciousness of the original relationship receives inspiration from the Lord. This does not mean that the Lord is someone's enemy and someone else's friend. He helps everyone. One who is not bewildered by the influence of material energy is saved, and one who is bewildered is destroyed. It is said, therefore, Haring vina nasriting taranti. No one can be saved from the repetition of birth and death without the help of the Supreme Lord. It is therefore the duty of all living entities to take shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu and thus save themselves from the cycle of birth and death. There are several points here in this purport that Srila Prabhupada has mentioned often. If you listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, you'll quite often hear him say, I have several times given the example, or I have several times said, and you know, it's something he said many, many times. For instance, here, the first line of the purport. Forgetfulness of one's relationship with Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of one's repeated birth and death. So for those who read Prabhupada's books, it's something they're going to, this point stated in slightly different ways, it's going to be something they're going to read again and again and again. And we may wonder why Prabhupada makes these same simple points over and over again. We see practically that people or devotees who stop reading Prabhupada's books because they think, well, I already know everything. I'm just reading the same thing again and again. But what happens is they forget. Although theoretically they know, unless we regularly hear, the tendency is to forget. So there's a very good reason why Srila Prabhupada made these points again and again, because we have to hear them again and again, because if we don't hear them again and again, then as a result of hearing again and again from those who are not devotees or those who are not on the level of Srila Vyasadeva and Srila Prabhupada, then we'll start to imbibe the consciousness of those who are forgetful of their relationship with Lord Vishnu. And then what will happen is that it will cause our repeated birth and death. So one has to go on hearing repeatedly, even if we think we know. Theoretically we may know, but the realization may not, often doesn't match the theoretical knowledge. So it's required to hear again and again. Now, here in this verse is made a point which is not discussed so much. It's an essential point of Krishna conscious understanding. And like pretty much all the statements here, we think they're ordinary, but all the statements here are, in this purport, are beyond the theological development of any persons who are not in Vaishnav culture. What we think is very ordinary is beyond, you go to any Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, whatever, they don't have this understanding. They may have big cathedrals, lots of members, but they don't even have this basic understanding that forgetfulness of one's relationship with Lord Vishnu is the cause of one's repeated birth and death. They don't even know that there is repeated birth and death. And actually, in a very deep state of ignorance, with a little bit of light coming through, that they have some idea that there is God, but they don't understand about repeated birth and death. Or in Buddhism, they understand there's repeated birth and death, but they don't accept that there's any supreme controller. So, deep ignorance all around. Now, here's a point that's being discussed here. How the Lord is no one's enemy and no one's special friend. Sometimes our own devotees find this difficult to understand. This parallels the verse, well-known verse of Bhagavad Gita. Which one? Maite te shuchapyaham, in which the Lord says that I am equal to all. I don't favor anyone particularly over anyone else. But if one approaches me as a devotee, then I reciprocate with him. So it appears to be contradictory. But it's not. It means that the Lord's mercy is open to... As Paramatma, he is upadrashtanumanta cha. He is the neutral overseer of everyone's actions, and he gives everyone their reward, whether it's good or bad. So he's neutral. You know, one non-devotee slaps another non-devotee in the face, and the Lord is neutral. He gives, all right, that's your... As one person's karmic stock lessened and another one's increased, he doesn't think... Just like some people think, well, the Jews are the chosen people of God, so he favors them. Or because you belong to a certain church, people think that, well, God will save us because we belong to this church. Or we're Christians and everyone else has to burn in hell. Or we're Brahmins and therefore we're better than others. But the Lord is neutral, in as much as he treats everyone equally, but if one comes forward in devotional service, then he reciprocates with that. He doesn't ban anyone from devotional service on any material grounds that, oh, you're not a Jew, so you can't go to heaven. Or you're not in a Madhva Brahmin family, so you're condemned forever. And these strange ideas, because people don't have clear spiritual knowledge, therefore they bring their material way of thinking, even when they have to speak about the Supreme Lord. They may use the word spiritual, but they have no clear understanding of what it means to be spiritual. They have no the basic understanding of the difference between spirit and matter, and the difference between the Supreme Spirit and the subordinate spirits. They don't have a clear understanding of this, and therefore they have to bring in their material conceptions. And they'll fight over that. They'll become very attached to these material conceptions, and they'll fight one fighting for the sake of a cause which is total ignorance against another total ignorance cause. So this should be understood, that the Supreme Lord helps everyone. Often people don't understand this thing. They think, well, I'm praying to God, so why doesn't he help me? People become atheists, that I'm worshipping the Lord and still my daughter died. I'm worshipping the Lord and still I lost all my money. So they become disappointed. They think that either there's no God or this is the wrong church. I should convert from a Christian to a Muslim. Well, they blame God, but they don't realize that He helps everyone. He's not a material person. He's not like a government officer who you can go and bribe. Well, I did what he wanted, so why didn't he do what I want for me? I was recently in Goa. They were telling that during the Portuguese rule, the judges, if you want a good judgment in your case, you had to bring a big fish to the judge. It's a coastal area. So someone brought a big fish to the judge. There was a joke going around. And still in the court, he ruled against him. He said, well, why did you rule against me? I brought you a big fish. He said, well, the other party brought me a bigger fish. So God is not like that. It's not that He's obliged. You do something to please Him. First of all, they don't know how to please Him. And the second thing is that His help is not in a way that we might think it to be. What is the first symptom? What is the symptom of your mercy, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Krishna? And you'd think that if someone asked God that, well, how do you give your mercy? We'll say, well, big cars, big houses. And he said, just the opposite. Yasyahamana grihnami harishe taddhanam shanam. Tado tato dhanam tyajantyasya swajana dukha dukitam. That to those who are merciful, I gradually take away all their wealth, and as a result, all their loved ones reject them. That's my mercy. And you think, what kind of God is this? But that is His mercy to those He's actually merciful to. Someone may come and say, oh, it happens in many cases. Someone in Baroda, I was told, the chief sponsor, financial sponsor of our temple, he has great faith because since he started giving to the temple, his business increased and increased and increased. And you can tell him anything. You give this much money, that much money, and he'll just give. He has such faith because his business just goes on increasing. He's not much interested in chanting Hare Krishna. But he has faith like that. So someone he's more merciful to may be in so many difficulties. So many times devotees kind of say, well, since I've been chanting, I'm getting so many problems. They can't see that this is the Lord's mercy on them. One who is Krishna conscious, one who understands Krishna as He presents Himself through Shastra, understands that whatever He does to me is His mercy. And with the faith that He is my best friend. So whatever happens to me is His mercy. It can be very difficult to understand. Especially if you want to serve Him and there are so many setbacks. You may think, well, why so many difficulties? Shortly after I took sannyas, I seriously lost my voice and had serious headaches for 1.5 years. So I just took sannyas so I could go and preach more, and then it was just physically stopped from doing so. It went on for about 1.5 years. I didn't know when it was going to stop. It could have gone on. The way it dragged on day after day, I thought that it was going to could last forever as long as I'm in this body. Eventually it cleared away. But what can you do? Tatenu kampan susamikshamana punjana mevatma kritang vipakam. His daya, His mercy, anukampa. If one accepts that whatever is happening, oh, this is mercy. I deserve much more, actually. I'm such a sinful person. But anyway, He's giving me something. Some small measure of what I deserve more. My sinful reactions. And one goes on serving the Lord anyway. Then appreciating this as His daya, His mercy, then one becomes daya bhak. One becomes the eligible for entering the spiritual world because of that, because one, that is a symptom of one's being fully surrendered. But this materialistic way of thinking that we belong to some particular group, our church or our people, we're better, we're closer. Of course, it's, we could say it's true to some extent. I mean, Shastra says that those who are born in India, they're generally more pious. It's not true in all cases. I mean, there are some people in Tamil Nadu nowadays who are very impious, very sinful. I mean, they're deliberately being as offensive as they can. It's, they have a whole movement dedicated to being as offensive as possible to Lord Vishnu. So, it's not that everyone in India is pious. But it's generally considered a better opportunity for taking to Krishna consciousness. We don't get at any of our temples in the West more than a lack of people coming on any single day as we get in some of our temples in India. Of course, other countries have less populations also. That's also a consideration. But even in the Western countries, when many, or countries outside India, when we get many thousands of people, it's often the majority are of Indian origin. So we can see that the tendency to be attracted to Krishna, mostly superficially, we can say, to a large extent, because most people who come are not very serious about taking to Krishna consciousness. And gradually, with preaching, that can become a more serious commitment. So, that is there. But then if one thinks that, well, you know, we're Indians, and who are all these people? Or the other way either, if Prabhupada, if you see in his books, there's a lot of encouragement for Americans. And we don't find anything in Shastra about America. But Prabhupada was preaching there, and he would encourage that you have taken to this. Now you spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, because he saw they had some energy to get up and do something. So he appreciated that, and he encouraged, Srila Prabhupada encouraged everyone. I mean, there are so many cases of devotees who Prabhupada encouraged, who no one else really wanted to deal with them even, because they're so crazy. I mean, a lot of Prabhupada's disciples who were living in the temples were, compared to nowadays who live in the temples, they wouldn't be allowed, actually. Because most of Prabhupada's disciples were, until shortly before they joined the temple, maybe even a few minutes before they joined, taking intoxication. I mean, there's one case someone told me that said, okay, I'm going to go and join the temple, but you're just standing on the outside the door and smoking his last joint. That's joint means a cigarette with marijuana in it, ganja or whatever it's called. And so, and then he went in and joined. So, it has this kind of intoxication has a certain kinds of effect on the consciousness, which is why people take them, and it makes you somewhat crazy. So many of the devotees were somewhat crazy, you could say, and Prabhupada tolerated that in many cases. There were limits, but Prabhupada was very merciful, especially in the beginning, and then later on he gradually became more strict. But Prabhupada was very concerned to see that everyone got the chance to take to Krishna consciousness. That was no one is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is anyone his enemy or friend. It means he's neutral in one sense, but then in another sense he is Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. In his role as Vishnu, the Palankarta, he oversees the maintenance of the material world. He's neutral in as much as he doesn't favor anyone, or they're just in dispensation of punishment and reward. He's neutral, just like you see. There's that's a Western figure, I believe. The figure of the statue of justice. They show holding a scale and the blindfold is there. So there's a sword in one hand and then a balance in the other hand. So the idea is that the blindfold is there means they don't, oh, this is my friend, this is my enemy. Now is my chance to punish this person. Even I heard in America sometimes some judge would refuse to hear a case because they say, well, I knew this person 20 years ago, so it's a conflict of interest or something like this. He said, it's not ethical for me to hear this case because I could be biased towards this person, something like this. So the idea should be completely neutral. But on the other hand, the well-wisher of all, even the justice in the court, his neutrality is a symptom of his being a well-wisher of all. Because he wishes well for the whole society, but you have to deal with certain individuals within it in a manner that is conducive, good for them and for the whole society. So you may, then he has to think, well, this person, yes, they're guilty, but they're pleading that, you know, I'm 50 years old, I never did any crime before, and it was just some moment of madness, and I have 3 children to look after, so if you put me in prison, it'll be very difficult for them, and I promise I won't do it again. And he may consider, by law, he should send them to prison. That would be good, to give a message to bad people, don't do bad things. And it'll stop him from doing any bad things for some time, teach him a lesson. But he may consider, well, under the circumstances, we have to, there's justice and there's mercy. So mercy doesn't mean to remove all justice. That's not mercy. Being so-called merciful to a wicked person means it's not being merciful to all his potential victims. So justice means that there's the consideration of mercy. And mercy means there must be consideration of justice. So both things are there. The Supreme Lord's mercy may manifest like that he punishes some. But that's also his mercy. Now one who comes toward him with the idea of serving, then he's more merciful because he doesn't, just like we see Prabhupada as the representative of the Supreme Lord, that just that someone has some tendency to begin to serve Krishna, he wants to encourage that. Because that tendency is so rare in the conditioned souls and so beneficial for them that if someone somehow or other takes to Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada said, the spark should be fanned. And the well-known example is there of the drunken man walking into Prabhupada's lecture in his first ever center, 26 Second Avenue in New York City, Manhattan. And you can hear on the recording he's saying something like a drunken man, no sense in it. And we hear from the Prabhupada Lilamrita that What he was actually doing was bringing in some rolls of toilet paper and he stuck them on the windowsill and walked out again. And Prabhupada doesn't use toilet paper, and he taught others also not to do so. But Prabhupada saw that through his drunken, sodden madness, there's some tendency to want to serve. He doesn't know how to serve, although what's saying it would have been more appropriate to bring some fruit, for instance. But he brought something that he thought might be useful. Some toilet paper, which is completely useless to... I mean, Prabhupada is expert at using all kinds of things. He probably used it for something. Not for what it was, not the purpose it was made for. But Prabhupada said there's a tendency to serve. So, very good. All right. Prabhupada accepted that out of his mercy, that that person is... he can do some service. All right. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to bring him into the temple, shave his head, and no one was being shaved at that time anyway. But it means that just the tendency to accept, very good. All right. Now, if he had remained there in the room while Prabhupada was trying to lecture and gone on with his all this mad, then he'd have to be escorted out. But he left by himself. So, okay. So, knowing how to deal with people appropriately so as to bring out their dormant tendency to serve Krishna. That is the art. What is that? Jiva Biparita Ruchi Parivartankara. That is the preaching means to change, to turn around the opposite tendency, the taste that the jivas have, the bound souls have, their taste or their tendency, their inclination, which is now is completely opposite to what it should be, to turn it around to the right direction. Instead of being bahyamukh, turned away from Krishna, how to make them unmukh. So the rules and regulations are there of Krishna consciousness, but for anyone to take that up, they have to take it up voluntarily. Now that's different, isn't it, from the laws of the state? That you voluntarily have to take it voluntarily. Of course it may be if you join a cricket club, you join voluntarily, but there are rules to be followed. If you play a game of cricket, you choose to play, you're not forced to play, but if you choose, there are certain rules you have to follow. So, if you don't follow, you're penalized. You may be... I don't know what they do in cricket, I don't know much about it. I suppose if you assault the umpire, you'll be sent off the field or something. Is that what they do? I have no idea. They do that sometimes? You'll be banned for a few matches. Yeah. So, there are rules to follow. If you don't follow, you don't get the result. If you're rewarded or punished according to what you do within the framework. So, within devotional service, we have to... It's said here that anyone who revives consciousness of their original relationship receives inspiration from the Lord. So, inspiring people to serve Krishna. It's almost kind of contradictory what we have to do, because people have no idea of serving Krishna and they just want to enjoy their senses. So in the beginning we may present Krishna consciousness as a kind of enjoyment. We say like that, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And we invite everyone, come to the festival, chanting, dancing, singing, free food. And it's true, it's enjoyable. And Krishna wants us to be happy, that's true. But in the beginning, when people think about being happy, they have no idea that happiness means to serve Krishna in a manner that he will be happy, and then automatically we will be happy. They just think, how I can be happy. And if we think, well, I can be happy, yeah, that looks like fun, that looks like a nice festival, let's go. In the Western countries, our preaching is almost all like that at the initial stages. Have fun, come to the festival. And in India, it may be that you come and you get some pious results, you'll get free from sins, you'll get blessed by God, and then you can enjoy later on more. Exactly. The idea is that what's in it for me, which is just the opposite concept of pure devotional service. But you have to start somewhere. When we're distributing books, we have to present it in such a way that immediately they feel inspired to relinquish 100 rupees or whatsoever and take this book. So if we tell them the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness and you surrender, they probably won't take it. Although it's the best thing for them, but if they're not ready for that. So we have to inspire them at their present level of consciousness to take the book. Means inspire them to come to a higher level of consciousness. Or whatever, somehow or other. They have to, they should be inspired to take the book. So this point that's being made here, it's actually far beyond the realm of mundane religion. We say mundane religion. That means people, they don't have a clear concept of who is the Supreme Lord or who we are. But that he can favor someone by punishing them, it's very difficult for them to understand. I mean, we can make the example that the child is, the father punishes the child for his own benefit, but mostly people, they can't relate that to God because they think, well, you know, mostly people think, well, I'm basically good. There's nothing really wrong with me. So why should God punish me? I mean, I'm good. So, or why should he punish anyone? He should just make everyone happy. Why doesn't he arrange it so that everyone's happy? Actually, he has. There's no reason for any unhappiness in this world, but we just make it so that the karmic reactions fall upon us individually and collectively, one after the other. If we followed his instructions, then this whole world would be completely blissful, but we don't follow. So, this philosophy should be preached. When we say philosophy, it's not philosophy in the way that people think of philosophy. Just some kind of intellectual ideas. But Krishna consciousness means a clear understanding of reality. How everything fits together. Why are we here? Who is God? Where is he? What's he doing? What are we supposed to do to approach him? Everything is given. So we have to clearly understand that. And if we clearly understand this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then we cannot but act in a way that is extremely elevated. It means manchayoviyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. It means engaging in pure devotional service, which automatically lifts us beyond the modes of material nature. But again, people of mundane consciousness, they can't see that, they can't understand that, and they presume that when they see a Krishna conscious person, they can only but ascribe mundane motives to him. They They can't understand. Why are you sitting on a big seat? They would challenge Prabhupada. Why? Or in one interview with press reporters, Prabhupada was sitting just like this, just very slightly above them. And they asked, well, you know, often the gurus, they sit on big seats, so why are you sitting on a big seat? Prabhupada said, yes, the guru should sit on a big seat. But I'm not doing because you are envious and you will criticize. He looked and he said, because you are envious, I'm not doing so. This is a concession for you. Otherwise the guru should be respected as good as God. So he told like that. So they tend to ascribe material motives. There's a famous example. They're criticizing Prabhupada. Why are you coming in this expensive car? Prabhupada said, this car's not very good. God rides in a gold car. This is just a tin can. Actually, they should have provided something better, but because this is the best according to your capacity, so I accept it. You're thinking a very expensive car. I'm thinking this is not very good. So in this way, unable to understand. Anyway, somehow or other, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness should be spoken again and again and again. And gradually people may come to understand. If they understand, that is for their great benefit. Hare Krishna.